We have Richard LeBlanc on the line as well. He's an associate professor of corporate governance, law and ethics at York University. He advises boards of various kinds on issues, including conflict of interest. Richard LeBlanc, welcome to Main Street.
Hi, Stephanie.
What do you think of the mayor chairing?
I agree with my colleague, Professor McDonald. I've never encountered a situation where a conflict of this nature involving a person chairing a meeting. The central difficulty, as I see it, is there is no conflict of interest policy at a senior level for this organization, and therefore there's nothing to point to guide, and a best practice conflict of interest statement would be what constitutes a conflict and what happens when a conflict occurs, which at a minimum would be not unduly influencing the debate, leaving the room, recusing yourself from voting, and I don't see that. So because of the absence of this policy, there's little that frustrated and at times emotional counselors can do when the person is sitting there chairing the meeting. So it becomes a personal thing as opposed to dealing with the actual issue. A proper governing body would go immediately into executive session and have independent legal advice. The city solicitors are not independent. And it could even be the case where you would construct a special committee composed of independent governors that would look at the report and with a view to implementing the recommendations. So there's no mechanism, there's no governance mechanism to deal with the current situation.
So the city solicitors are in a conflict of interest as well?
They are assessing their own advice and work. So any special committee of a governing board should have the ability to retain independent counsel and instruct the organization to fund that retention. So the Audit and Finance Committee should have, within its charter, procedures to retain independent lawyers to determine and also an independent audit, in internal audit. There's no evidence that existed as well or does exist. So independent advisors advising the Audit and Finance Committee and advising counsel should occur. And as near as I can tell, it's not occurring.
And I just want to clarify something that you touched on earlier. Should the mayor even be in the room during a discussion like the kind that was held on Tuesday night?
In my view, no, not at all, because it inhibits debate and dialogue.
Chris McDonald, what do you think? Should the mayor be in the room for those kinds of conversations?
No, I agree with Professor LeBlanc on that. I mean, clearly, if there are questions to be answered, then, you know, for practical purposes, the mayor needs to be present for those, you know, to answer questions. But there should be a time when those deliberations and discussions of his own decision-making need to be discussed without him present.
Richard LeBlanc, what do you think of what you heard in those interactions?
Well, it's personal, and it's but it's largely missing the issues. I mean, the issues are, there's some, as I can tell, some significant deficiencies in best governance practices at the senior-most level of a major Canadian city, including, if you look at the report, the absence of a chief risk officer, internal audit, the absence of independent legal advice, the absence of ethical training, internal controls over financial reporting, which happened, you know, some 10 years ago, segregation of duties, sign-off procedures, proper approval processes. That's what the debate and the dialogue should be, is how do we implement these changes? So the notion that it's time to move on, it's in fact quite the opposite. It's time to address some of the governance deficiencies embedded in the report.
Chris McDonald, what were you thinking when you were listening to those clips?
Well, I was thinking that, you know, two things. One is that there was evident a stunning lack of policy, right? Nobody was saying, look, according to our conflict of interest policy, this is what we have to do. That was totally absent. But even in addition to the lack of policy, it seemed to be just sort of a lack of understanding of what the principles behind such a policy would be, right? The idea that conflict of interest is not an accusation, it's a situation you find yourself in, and here's how you deal with it appropriately to keep, to maintain the integrity of the decision-making process. People just didn't seem to have a really good command of that set of concepts.
Did you say, Chris, that conflict of interest is a situation in which you find yourself? It's not an accusation?
Yeah, that's right. Being in a conflict of interest is like having a cold, right? It's not your fault that you've got a cold, but what you decide to do with it is, you know, whether you decide to go to work with your gold and give it to your coworkers, that's up to you. Similarly, you can end up through no fault of your own in a conflict of interest, right? If I were a lawyer and one of my clients decided to sue another one of my clients, well, I'm now in a conflict of interest. It's not my fault. The question is, how am I going to deal with it? Am I going to have the sense to, you know, recognize there's a conflict of interest, to disclose it to the relevant parties, and then ideally to remove myself from the decision-making.
Chris McDonald, if it's so obvious the mayor should not be chairing these meetings, what do you make of the fact that he's doing it? He has an MBA. He's not an uneducated man.
Right. I'm really not too sure what to make of it, except that, you know, these sorts of situations have a tendency to, you know, people have a tendency to sort of dig in, and to some extent it's an adversarial political system, and when challenged, people tend to dig in rather than to say, wait a minute, you're right, here's a better way to handle this. So it seems like it's being driven by, almost by like a, without exaggerating it, driven sort of by a panicked response to criticism.